You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. For the past 45 years, Leonard Peltier has been behind bars for a crime he says he didn't commit. The Native American activist was accused of killing two FBI agents during a shootout in 1975 on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. Despite scant evidence and a trial rife with misconduct, Peltier was sentenced to two consecutive life sentences, and he's been denied parole several times since.
You know, I suspected and knew that I wasn't going to receive a fair trial or fair anything to happen with the legal system, judiciary system.
Over the years, Peltier's imprisonment has been denounced by people like Pope Francis, Nelson Mandela, the Dalai Lama, and more. Many people expected former President Bill Clinton to grant him clemency, but he didn't. And neither have any of the subsequent presidents. The U.S. attorney who helped put Peltier in prison has even pleaded with President Joe Biden to grant him clemency. And now Peltier is pleading for help amid the COVID-19 pandemic. According to reporting from the Huffington Post, he says, quote, fear and stress associated with his prison's lockdowns are taking a toll on everyone, including him. At 77 years old, he's already had serious health problems, including diabetes. And here's Peltier's lawyer, Kevin Sharp, speaking about his health back in December.
It is really touch and go with Leonard's health. He's got some serious issues that really cannot be dealt with within the Bureau of Prison system. We need to get him out.
For more on Peltier and his activism, we're joined now by Ken Blancett, the Langston Hughes Associate Professor of Indigenous Studies and History at the University of Kansas. Professor, thank you for being here.
Hello, Melissa, and thanks for having me on the show today.
All right. For those listeners who aren't familiar with Leonard Peltier, can you tell us a little bit about his life and activism?
Leonard Peltier grew up at Turtle Mountain, Chippewa Nation, which was located in North Dakota. He really got turned on to activism living in Seattle. His mother had also, it was Dakota, had been living on relocation in Portland, and he had relocated there in his early years. But when he moved to Seattle, there was what we call the Fish-In protest movement that was occurring in 1964. And he decided to dedicate his life at that point to working with and for indigenous rights in this country. And then after that, shortly thereafter in 1969, we had the Alcatraz takeover, which lasted over 19 months. And he saw dramatic changes. He saw relocation as a program that was a very controversial program repealed. He saw termination legislation eradicated by the Nixon administration in 1970. They were beginning to see successes for the occupations and for nonviolent protest movements, which was culminated in an era called Red Power, which was an era in which a lot of our elders today had taken the chance to put their lives and bodies on the line to make significant changes for indigenous rights in this country. And by 1970, he would be involved in the Fort Lawton takeovers in Seattle, which today is the Daybreak Star Indian Center, in which he was involved in three of those takeovers of the fort, which met with success as well. He got involved with the American Indian Movement that was based out of Minneapolis, Minnesota, and founded in 1969.
Now come up to the moment that that ultimately ends in his incarceration. Why was the FBI on reservation that day?
It's a great question. You know, and this stems from a longer history. 1972, Richard Oakes, was Akwesasne Mohawk, one of the leaders of the Alcatraz takeover movement, was assassinated in 1972. And this would precipitate the Trail of Broken Treaties March on Washington, which would lead to the takeover of the BIA building. That takeover was during an election year for Richard Nixon. And of course, no one was prosecuted and everyone was allowed to leave. And Leonard Peltier was involved with that. He was kind of seen as being kind of in the upper echelon of leadership. Shortly after that, the police began targeting members of the American Indian Movement, more particularly higher profile members. And Leonard Peltier was one of those profile members that was targeted. And the shootout at the jumping pole compound that would occur in 1975 was an AIM encampment in which two FBI agents, Agents Kohler and Williams, would be killed, along with an American Indian Movement leader and organizer, Joe Stuntz, who was Coeur d'Alene, would be killed. Ironically, no one was ever brought up on charges or no investigation was ever done into Joe, who killed Joe Stuntz. But the FBI then started a nationwide manhunt to be able to track down any of the people that were at that encampment who they themselves stipulated that they were just defending themselves, and they don't know who killed the FBI agents. And there is absolutely, as you brought up earlier, no evidence that was brought up. In fact, two of the members, Dino Butler and Bob Robidoux, would be brought up on charges, their car exploding in Kansas. Mysteriously, they would find a gun in that inferno of a fire that enveloped their car. They would be brought in to face charges of the murders of Agents Kohler and Williams. The court in Iowa would find that there was no evidence, and they actually listened to a defense plea and found them not guilty in a court of law, which meant the only other person that was outstanding that they could really, you know, pin this on at the time was going to be Leonard Peltier, who had been had made his way to Canada. And so they were working to extradite him, and eventually his trial would happen in 1977, and they would use the false testimony of a girlfriend by the name of Myrtle Poorbear, who had never even met Leonard Peltier, and he'd never met her. And this was coercive testimony that was used to extradite him from Canada to get him to stand trial in the United States for something that there was no evidence connecting him to.
So is there now, I mean, you've walked us through this history, you've given us sort of the clear reasons why the FBI was targeting him, you've given us some clear examples of the sort of lack of evidence. Is there an opportunity for any measure of justice in this moment, given the COVID pandemic, given that Leonard's now in his 70s, is there some possibility that President Biden is going to grant clemency here?
I think there's a great chance, and there's always been a chance. There was a chance that President Clinton was going to grant clemency, or that even President Obama was going to grant clemency. I think now is the time, and I think especially in the heightened awareness of the times that we live in regards to America's previous history of failed race relations in this country, in regards to our own awakening to the idea that there's structures of racism that have trickled into our government system, that have trickled into every modicum of our society that we're trying to fight against and trying to alleviate, we need a re-examination of Peltier's case. And that re-examination will lead us to understanding that we have a person that's been serving a 45-year sentence thus far for a crime in which there was no evidence to convict him of. And literally at that, it's a travesty of injustice. It's a travesty of human rights. And for a president that wants to make a stand on human rights, that wants to showcase that this is a new era in America, that this is a new a new kind of platform moving forward in which equality is to be addressed and answered and placed on a pedestal, this is a way to make that statement. And it's time that hopefully President Biden is the president to make that assertion and that statement clear.
So Kent, you've also, in providing us this history, even in bringing us to this moment of possibility with President Biden, but help us to also understand, are these kinds of sort of at least alleged human rights violations, potential imprisonment, the reign of terror that you talked about, is this all in the past? Or is there a continuing effort to silence the voices of Indigenous activists?
We have 500 years of this as Indigenous peoples, partly because of our special status in the sense that we signed treaties and we still remain independent and sovereign nations within this country. So that has always created a provocation of violence and control from the United States, which we can see even up to the present day in 2016 with the protests at Standing Rock. This becomes kind of where history repeats itself, but it's an ongoing legacy of what we've been facing as Native peoples throughout our history with the United States.
Kent Blancett is the Langston Hughes Associate Professor of Indigenous Studies and History at the University of Kansas and author of A Journey to Freedom, Richard Oakes, Alcatraz, and the Red Power Movement. Kent, thank you for joining The Takeaway.
Thank you for having me. This was great.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.